And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Up next, the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it is the dark, dark, dark of the moon. There'll be a new moon at 2 Virgo on Monday at 7:13 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, when Mars, energy, and Saturn boundaries get together, they conjoin, reminding us that we are here to insource everything we've been outsourcing. You know, again, Saturn, authority, dedication. It says dedication grows the form whereby we gather. So our guests I will be bringing in some moments are perfect for this, but also wanted to lead off really with Brother Leonard Collins' beautiful Villanelle, you know, in which he says, from bitter searching of the heart, quickened with passion and with pain, we rise to play a greater part. This is the faith from which we start. Men shall know commonwealth again, and humans and animals and women. From bitter searching of the heart, we love the easy and the smart, but now with keener hand and brain, we rise to play a greater part. The lesser loyalties depart, and neither race nor creed remain. From bitter searching of the heart, not steering by the venal chart that trick the mass for private gain, we rise to play a greater part, reshaping narrow law and art whose symbols are the million slain. From bitter searching of the heart, we rise to play a greater part. Thank you, Brother Leonard. It is also powerful, as we have been segueing from last week, where we had, you know, wonderful blue mind, the power of water, great allies again, animating again, deep, cool brain. We segue from that. That was a great book by, or it is a great book by Wallace J. Nichols. And then into now, into the myriad conflagrations around the world. And in doing the chart, the signature for Mike Brown's death on August 9th, 2014, 12:03 p.m. Central Daylight Time in Ferguson, Missouri. It was the waxing full moon that night. We remember the full moon Leo Aquarius, which is about community and celebration. And we say, create theater or live melodrama. You know, bonfires or arson, take your pick. But there are images for each degree of the zodiac, and it's a powerful statement. We knew that his death, Mike Brown's death, would not be hidden. It was, again, Leo overhead going, oh, should have been a festival, but no, but may it lead to that. And Venus, art form in Cancer, reminding us, the realm Cancer says, all life deserves safety. A flower pot, a womb, a courtyard, an enclosure, a place whereby to have intimacy. And the image for Venus at the moment of Mike Brown's death is, a furious storm rages through a residential canyon. Divine energy, nature overcoming human structures, heightening of consciousness through emotional intensity, stirring things up, civilization's precariousness, leveling social structures. And we go, whew! Whew. We remember, you know, great ally, Sicilian storyteller Gioia Tempinelli says, one of the great themes in fairy tales is the careful living in a particular place. This courtyard, this tree, this badger, you know, that intimacy weaves the world together. So, more than perfectly, we have our wonderful ally guests today. And it is, here we go. It is our wonderful ally, Cassandra Ferreira, and also Mark Lakeman, wonderful TED talk that he gave, Village Building Convergence in Portland, now spreading down to Sebastopol and out into the world. May it be so. So welcome, Cassandra Ferreira.
Thank you, Caroline. It's great to be on your show today.
That's wonderful. And welcome, Mark Lakeman, joining us from Portland, Oregon, and soon journeying to Sebastopol. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Caroline. It's definitely an honor to be here.
That's great. So, Cassandra, when we were speaking backstage, you know, and you were going, oh, this is so wonderful, and Mark Lakeman has this great TED Talk called Badass Democracy, which indeed is true. I recommend all beings to search and find that. Again, about the power of vision and the power of community. But I loved everything that you were saying, Cassandra, and maybe you could animate the micro. You were saying, one, this 10-day placemaking festival, you know, that will be happening in Sebastopol from September 12th through the 21st. Very powerful, coming up to the autumnal equinox when Pluto, death, rebirth, stations to go forward, whatever seeds we plant will happen. And you were saying part of what was great, part of what is great about, you know, the work that you're doing and the cahooting with Mark Lakeman and what Mark's been dedicated to for so long in Portland and elsewhere is that everyone loves this, right? Okay, let me hand it to you, Cassandra. Everyone loves this thing.
Well, that's been my experience, and so I'm just going to stay with that story because that seems to be the most fun, and it's what's happening. So we had this... actually, Mark came down a couple of years ago, almost to the day, and gave his talk here in Sebastopol at the Sebastopol Grange. And after that, a few of us were just scratching our heads going, we got to bring this placemaking thing to Sebastopol. And it was we were germinating and trying to figure out what to do. And then a dear mutual friend of both Mark and I's, a fellow named Sebastian and his wife Jenna, moved from Portland to Sebastopol. Their family was originally here in Sebastopol, so they really have woven together a deep experience in the Portland Village Building Convergence Movement down here to Sebastopol. And when they came, it was like, okay, maybe we should have a village building convergence here. Like, that's what we should do. And I can't tell you the enthusiasm that we have received. People, both young and old, there's so many young activists that just love this idea, and they just infuse us all with their energy, and all the way to the elders of the community advising us and helping us get through all the processes we need to with the city council, and just every group in our town, everyone is just such a big thumbs up. The businesses, it's like, it's so awesome to be part of something that everybody is saying yes to. And that just obviously feels really good.
And that invitation to participate. So it's great, Mark Lakeman. I did watch your wonderful TED Talk, you know, Badass Democracy, in which you also turned to the design ingenuity of, what, second grade girls?
Yeah, in order to basically verify something I think that is evident everywhere, but we don't really see in ourselves, and that we sort of feel and maybe suspect that we are all somehow placemakers. So just looking at the behavior of kids and the way that they, when they come out of their mothers, they tend to put pillows under tables and drape blankets over things and create spaces and places of intimacy. They're already, obviously, I mean, if you watch them closely enough, they seem to be recreating womb space as an instinctive expression. So we look at that, and then we watch their tendency to just create endlessly, and you can throw massive problems into their consideration that adults across the country are wrestling with and can't seem to come to grips with. And on the other hand, just offer them to a child, and a child will say, well, oh my gosh, have you tried this? Have you tried this and this? And they'll be using metaphor and poetry, and they'll be referencing history, and then their inherent tendency to be a storyteller is expressed, and never designing space, but always sort of creating place. They don't just create a thing. There's always a story attached to it. So we've done these experiments with children to see that they are able to problem solve in a limitlessly creative way. To solve the sort of vexing problems that adults seem to have given up on, beginning with the idea that, oh, I'm an adult, therefore I am powerless where I live, therefore a bureaucracy rules my life, therefore I will endure in frustration and, you know, sort of die unhappy. I mean, whatever sort of mindset we seem to have accepted, children haven't yet adopted, and so they seem to be capable of really reaching into that limitless well of inspiration that I think we all should still have access to. We can see it in kids.
No, and also what the second grade young girls were coming up with was, oh my goodness, of course, put a pony, put a pony in the middle, and then people will want to have pony rides, and then they will want to pet the pony, and then somebody else said, yes, ice cream, that's ice cream, and storytelling and these things. We go, ooh, yes, yeah. Well, we're quickening, as you say, we're journeying backwards to one, you know, wonderful David Grimes phrase, you know, to feed the innocent dignity of our child heart again, going, oh. And I love that you bring up, yes, pillows and card table tents, and many of us may remember, I still remember the haven, the honeysuckle hedge with a deep secret place where you could hide. And in the designing, you know, remember William McDonough says, the ship crossing the ocean, who's in charge? You know, and people go, the captain, the whatever, and he goes, nope, the designer. And this idea of talking to architects saying, you know, many villages, you know, would have places just intrinsically, naturally occurring where there would be, where you gathered to do your laundry, you know, where five people could talk. And then here's a secret place where two people could talk. And then here's where a community could talk, could gather and all of that. So, be the routee. We've picked up the routee, the Tahitian exhorter who goes, no, you humans, you did not come from a generation, from ancestors who knew about community to just lie there and have a grid imposed on you. No, rise up. So, Cassandra, you're a great routee, because as you were animating again backstage, you know, what's going to be happening in Sebastopol, part of me was like, oh, I want to be there. Okay, I will telepathically be there. You know, it is, it is village building, conjuring the commons, power of place, you know, barn rising. You know, so this 10-day event, you know, it is daytime and nighttime, right? I mean, Cassandra, yes. First, and then Mark, feel free to jump in. So what are these cross-pollinating collaborations? They're, you know, gardening, art, you know, food, music. I hand it to you to make it irresistible, so that all of us go, oh yes, we want to either go there or make it happen where we are.
Yeah. Well, I'll do my best. It's an amazing flow of events for 10 days. The team that we've been working with has just created a lot, but it's not just us. It's the people in Sebastopol that said, you know, we think that this area in between our current downtown and this new thriving economic area, we need to connect that. There's a corridor there that is very lifeless. And so one of our local groups, Chitaslo, said we should paint murals on the streets and have a local artist design something that has all of our symbolism in it. And they had a competition and a friendly competition, of course, and all these different artists submitted, and everybody voted, and now we're going to paint this corridor, and we're also going to paint an intersection in the Barlow, and we're going to be painting a community stage. So there's all of this, pick up a paintbrush and everybody create art together in the streets. So that's going to be happening. We also have the village building convergence has a lot of history with natural building and building with materials that are accessible, local, easy to work with. Kids can make cob. And so we're making cob, a cob oven at a very favorite local coffee shop. We're embellishing bus stops and making cob bus stops. We're doing community kale patches so that, you know, people just open up certain areas for everybody to eat kale, and all sorts of great projects, eco art in our laguna. You love this. We're doing fairy gardens for kids in Ives Park. So, and all of these activities during the day are just available for locals, visitors, everybody just to come in. There'll be a program to guide you around, and you can do all sorts of, you know, fun things throughout the 10 days. And then at night, we have educational and musical and just celebratory programming. On some nights, there'll be bands, music playing. We'll have presentations. Mark is doing a presentation. The Starhawk will be there on Monday, September 15th. I could get more detailed with the dates. We have a great website, www.sebastopolvbc.org.
Wait, Say that again. Sebastopol.
Okay.
Yes?
Sebastopol. S-E-B-A-S-T-O-P-O-L. Sebastopol. And then V is in village, B is in building, and C is in convergence. SebastopolVBC.org to see the whole schedule. Brock Dolman will be coming with Carrie Brady. They're going to do ego system restoration, so playing with the words really beautifully there. Great music. Every night's got something going on, and I could go on and on.
No, and that's right, and we will. One of the things you point out, Mark, in your great TED Talk, Badass Democracy, you know, is that we need these places for gathering, and that the United States has the fewest public gathering places of what in the world? Of any place?
Of all first world nations, yes.
Uh-huh.
If I may, I'd like to explain. The places that we love to visit across the world, that we save our money to fly across the oceans to go see, are places that are largely generated by the people who live there. And even if they have some resident hierarchy that is oppressive or overly controlling in many respects, nonetheless, as a place-based community, they tend to express their needs and somehow try to meet them. As opposed to that, where people are inhabiting what they create, instead, where we live, we basically live in developments where bankers, developers, politicians decide what will be created, the physical fabric that we will inhabit, that the land that we live on is essentially a commodity, that the houses that we live in are fundamentally more products than they are a cultural expression. And so when we look at the American landscape and we realize that almost every American neighborhood is missing even one public square, and most of them only have parks, either they're put in retroactively or they're mandated by more recent policy. But we live in a policy-driven landscape that is created by other people. We might be building the houses that we live in, historically speaking, but we never tend to imagine them. They tend to be created whole-scale as part of an investment strategy, and then people move in, and everything seems normal. The grass is mowed, there's flowers planted, everything's hanging baskets and sort of ribbons flying in the wind as part of the sales strategy, but the benches are utterly missing, the places for interaction. The great village tree that the stories are supposed to be told under is absolutely missing. I mean, on one hand, you have the developer saying, well, I can't really market that and sell a commons now, can I? So I should really make everything private so that everything is mortgageable, so that somebody can be extracting from this landscape continuously. So that's their point of view. And from the politician's point of view, they're always nervous about community gatherings, so you wouldn't tend to want a bench or you wouldn't tend to want a village square. So because of our land development practices all across, not just the USA, but Canada as well, and also Australia and everywhere else that the colonial grid has been violently imposed, the development practices that happen afterwards that fill in the framework of the grid all suppose that the land is now for sale. You know, sorry, indigenous people, what before was a sacred, continuous landscape of bioregions and interconnected cultures, imperfect, now becomes a landscape for sale in which nothing is sacred and nothing will remain because everything is designed to just turn over endlessly. So we have an inherently unstable situation because there's never been an expression of place from the community that is rooted in an environment in this landscape since it was colonized. So this is a fundamentally unsustainable set of patterns that actually starts off trying to defeat democracy and the tendency, well, the inherent need that people have to gather. As one very conservative person put it in one of our workshops in Portland here, he described himself as conservative, and he said, you know what, this is a common cause, and I'm going to say to my friends now, you know, from now on when I talk about this work, what good is freedom of assembly without a place to assemble? And I think he encapsulated it right away there. This is an issue that affects all communities irrespective of their political orientation. And this is why I'm so excited to work on it, because I think it's one of the great unifying opportunities of our time.
Oh, well said. Resonant, you know, all stories guide us to all stories. So part of our, yes, composting colonialism, all the myriad sneaky ways in which it suffuses and infuses our hearts and our gathering. Oh, that's really good. And then, Mark, you brought up in your talk, wait, the game Monopoly was created in 1785? Did I catch that right?
No, that was the National Land Ordinance, that Roman colonialism for the entire United States all the way to the West Coast. No, Monopoly was created in at the beginning of the 20th century by a woman named Lizzie Maggie, who invented it as a way to help North Americans, basically, you know, people living in the USA with the National Land Ordinance and Canadians with the Dominion Land Survey. She wanted to help them realize that they lived within an imposed framework based on Roman colonialism that was designed to be absent gathering places from the start. It started off originally called the Landlord's Game, and you can actually find. Yeah, but it was eventually morphed, I think, especially once it was purchased by the entity that became the Parker Brothers. It became much more of a reduced and less politically charged game, but it started off trying to help people understand the context they live in.
How interesting. That's right, because you say in your talk, your TEDx talk, Badass Democracy, that, you know, in Monopoly, the jail and the parking lot are the only places for gathering. And we go, and how perfect, in a way, that the game itself was colonized, that it was sort of like the Wizard of Oz set up to warn us, and then, you know, or how people go, oh, madman, I want to live just like that. And it's like, no, that's not the point. It's not. Okay. But so the Landlord's Game, and just as a little sidebar too, you know, games that, you know, if we've outsourced leadership and we've also outsourced games, you know, video games going, you know, to kill dispassionately and all. And I just remember from years back, thousands of miles apart, 3 months apart, Native American ally in the Midwest said, you know, Cat's Cradle, the string game. And I was like, yes. She said, that's how we taught our children to enter the dream world. And I'm like, ooh. And then months later, I was in New Zealand and working with some Maori elders, and one of them said, you know, Cat's Cradle, the string game. It's how we taught our children to enter the dream world. I'm like, oh, of course, this kind of fine-tune hand coordination that puts you in a reverie, you know, and that games were how a culture passed on its wisdom and its reverie. And so I imagine, you know, Mark Lakeman and Cassandra, that games, the re-inhaling and animating of desirable games, might be part of this Commonwealth movement, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think games are very powerful ways to teach, and they also have all kinds of embedded meanings and associations and values. The game of chess, of course, being the game of kings, that is about playing colonialism where kingdoms are set against each other. And, of course, you know, you honor the patriarchy when you say, oh, well, of course, you can't take the king. I'll tell you what, when I play chess, I freaking take the king every single time, you know.
And then I guess the antidote, in a way, to chess would be the Japanese game of Go, do you think?
I'm not actually familiar with Go.
Aha. I do not presume people spend their entire lives the master of Go, you know. But it's about surrounding. It's not about conquering. You're about surrounding things. Anyway, but so we put that to one side, going, very different, interesting worldview. And, you know, there's many. Anyway, so over there. But, yes, the Zocalo, the caravanserai, and Cassandra, great. How do you describe yourself these days? Since I couldn't find my introductory notes, I apologize to both of you for your longer resumes I was going to animate. But Cassandra, what is your current moniker for yourself?
Well, I kind of can't put myself in one moniker, it turns out. So I've been doing a lot of community organizing with the Village Building Convergence, and so I could be a community organizer. I also help catalyze communities of place where people come to live together, and I work with people at various stages of that, and that's actually the work that led me to discovering Mark Lakeman, because I was, you know, doing work in rural eco-village type of circumstances, which which I love and adore and support, and I was really itching to bring my passion for community and place to more people. And this placemaking movement just strikes that, both of those chords, because, you know, it feels like community for everybody everywhere, but specifically I love how you said careful living in a particular place, because I guess you're asking me about myself, but I'm starting to riff on
you are the world, and your name is wonderful, because now we have changed the myth, so Cassandra is believed. Okay.
Yay. Yeah.
So that's great, and also, of course, you are
a
collegial astrologer, and what I wanted to bring in again, the guiding, you know, as we decolonize our minds, I love the Thai saying, you know, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism, our sense that everything's alive. And I was speaking to you, Mark, backstage, going, do you know the work of Lily Yeh? And you were like, no. Oh, yes, I do. Okay. I love Lily so much and her work, because it is so clean and not colonial. She goes to a community and invites the creativity there to reanimate, you know, in these hard places in North Philadelphia, in Haiti, in Rwanda, you know, after the killing in the only school in Beijing for the children of migrant workers, a grim place. As my late great friend Jacob Pearl said, you know, we'd be driving around, he'd go, looks like a prison, must be a school, and to begin to animate and, you know, bring, you know, again, art that is living and animate the mythology of the community. Cassandra, I always loved that in world mythology, the presiding deity of the marketplace is the trickster, is really the kind of Uranus dynamic. In Santeria and in the Caribbean, it is Oya who hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. Oh, next time you do that, I'm going to come with a horsetail whip and play that role. So it does remind us exactly of the quality of dedication to what you're up to, and Mark Lakeman deep dedicated heart, which is the marketplace is not meant to be this corporate mall, or as a young friend says, Voldemort. It's meant to be the Zocalo, the caravanserai, where there's, you know, spices from Syria and the Silk Road, and the storyteller lives there, and, you know, again, you can see everyone and run into everybody you know, and how weaving what a blanket, well, with some other metaphor, well, anyway, but a weaving of a cloak of solace that you can go and hang out and be alone, but you can connect with people and all those things. So, Mark, you've been doing this for 14 years in Portland, and so each year there's an additional, or just kind of delineate that path.
Okay. Well, let's see, very quickly. I used to work in corporate architecture and planning. That was in the late 80s. I left that because of a gigantic toxic waste cover-up that basically confirmed things that I already knew about my profession, and I wasn't going to be a designer on those terms. I wanted to design a better world, and that's how my designer parents sort of cultivated me as a kid, like to see that it was a cultural mission or trust that we all have to uplift the human family through our intention combined together. So I quickly left that job. I traveled about 7 years visiting indigenous cultures, and everywhere I went, I asked what was wrong with me and what was wrong with my people. And the people that I visited were so delighted to be asked that question, and they basically just unloaded. An elaboration and an explanation on colonial infrastructures. And the great revelation wasn't just what was done to them. It was the fact that it had been done to really everyone in the world. This man, at one point in a rainforest in southern Mexico, just after the Zapatista revolution had started, and I managed to somehow be in the forest visiting this group called the Lacandon Maya.
Oh, yeah.
This person was explaining to me that my own villages, my own ancestry had been disrupted, and my people had been subsumed into this great sort of wave of empire that had played out and eventually washed over the Western Hemisphere. And this person said, so, you know, feel as bad as you need to, but then get over it, because this is one great cause and we're all caught up in it. Everyone's villages are under attack by this insane confusion that aspires to homogenize all of our reality. So coming back to Portland after hearing all of this great advice about how to decolonize myself or how to start undertaking projects, I just stood in the middle of the street intersection where I had basically grown up, right on one of the corners. And I'd been told, you know, when you get home, look at the lines drawn on the land. Understand how everyone is divided. And if you want to know who you are, try to understand when the story of your family first came into contact with those lines. You know, for me, that would be probably my Celtic ancestry being attacked by the Romans. So I just looked around and I was like, oh my God, we live on a game board. It's a set of rules that we've never invented. It's absent place that we would have otherwise created. And so I just started to work with my neighbors to just delightfully create all sorts of illegal structures all over the neighborhood.
So hold that thought. We're going to take a very short break, a one-minute break, and we'll be right back. But hold that thought, and we will jump right back in.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. Showered his head with quasar and made his tortoise cry.
I'll get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
I'll get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So today, more than perfectly and wonderfully, our guests are longtime ally Cassandra Ferreira, community builder, fellow cultural mythologist, astrologer, and also wonderful Mark Lakeman. We are focusing at the moment on SebastopolVBC.org. It is a place making. We are conjuring the commons, the power of place, the power of community, decolonizing all the outer and sneaky inner parts of that, that we not live in an imposed grid but grow a form that really serves community. And Mark, you were right in the middle of a thought where we took our break there. Feel free to jump back in on that.
Thank you. Well, I think I was giving you a long response to your question about sort of the story of city repair. I just want to honor the fact that people have been working so hard for so long to get a sense of what has happened to us. And the lucky piece that I got to contribute in my own context has surely been contributed in contexts all over the place, all over the world, was to realize that we had been place-based people. We had been villagers before. As I stood in the intersection of my own neighborhood and I looked around, I realized, my God, we're divided by design. Someone has decided that living and working will be zoned in different areas of the city, so we are compelled to leave where we live to go work elsewhere to make the money to pay for where we live that we hardly ever get to occupy. So I was looking around just laughing. Oh, my God, I learned these things in school, in architecture and planning school, that there are these paradoxes embedded in the designed landscape. But the great error of our people has been to submit to the idea that others should design where we live and that we will not be designers. We will be more consumers. We will pay a ticket to somebody else's idea of culture or reality and just consume it instead of being generators of culture ourselves. And with that great mistake, you know, we become unsustainable from the beginning and by design. So what happened with this kind of revelation personally was I looked around and just realized, my God, we should be engaged like all these other villages I had visited in the world, where everyone would just say, oh, well, this grandmother has quite a long way to walk to get bread that she brings home every day. She needs at least three places to sit. So then they would just create it. In every village where I would go, people would just create. And I was so hardwired to think, oh, but we must draw it first. We must digest it. Mustn't we get funding and permission? Shouldn't we get a permit? And they would say, drop it. Drop the pencil. Okay? Drop the pencil. You know, grab the machete and let's build it now without wasting our life. So I came back to where I lived, and I was like, my God, there should be amenities on all of these corners that define and animate the edges of the space where this intersection here should be a village crossroads, by God, you know? I mean,
right, crossroads, very important sacred places, yes.
Yeah, we used to bless our children there, but now we just hit each other with cars.
Right. So, yeah, and...
You know,
And also, I think in your TEDx talk, Badass Democracy, in Portland, right, there's a little in the Zocalo, in the square, there's a little lending library that's open all the time, right?
Yeah, supposedly. Now, according to some articles I read, it's kind of hard to believe, but the little library on our corner is supposed to be the first little free library in the world, and. That's kind of interesting. I mean, I think that our intersection transformation is the first of its kind.
Mm.
Certainly our 24-hour solar-powered self-service T-station would be the first of its kind. But the edges of the intersection are animated by places to sit, places for kids to play, all sorts of permaculture gardens and expressions, places for information and trading. And it's all self-service. It costs absolutely nothing. And everybody sort of that lives around it maintains it and enjoys it, and then people come from all over the world to visit it and talk about it, write about it, get a cup of tea, and that sort of thing. So really what it is it's saying, oh, yes, we are still villagers. We are waking up within the grid, and we're deciding like a mycelial web to sort of insert humanity or to rehumanize, maybe to re-ecologize this imposed colonial structure. And that's the gist of the strategy, to say, oh, to question the whole basis of our whole sort of set of assumptions around our reality, and then say, no, instead we're going to re-inhabit this and transform it so that it's an expression of us. It's a reflection of what we know now. And I just have to say, as opposed to flying across the ocean to see a decent public space like a plaza or a piazza that might be medieval, the chance that we have in our time is to create public gathering places, neighborhood forums that express our value for equity and our celebration of diversity and all these other causes that we have been championing for decades. But now we can recreate the commons to actually look like the people that we have become, you know, spaces that are worthy of the descendants that we are making now. That's how I feel about it now.
Well, that's wonderful. And Cassandra, when you said, you know, this is something that everybody gets engaged in and everybody loves, and we go, all right, so the mean corporate, you know, hardened heart would say, but then homeless people are going to sleep on those benches, you know, and we go, well, maybe they will, you know, but it is an interesting conniption fit inducing thing that, you know, we live in a world of refugees. I mean, animals and people and everything and the homeless.
Yeah.
And so how do you address that, Cassandra and Mark, going, well, will there be spaces for homeless people to set up ingenious, you know, solar-powered tents that have indigenuity over there? I mean, what is your response to people going, nah, 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 nah?
Well, probably not in the first year here in Sebastopol, but the beautiful thing is that this is a container we're creating literally and figuratively. So it's a container of these public gathering places where we can kind of get maybe some more complex problems, but we can also have more complex opportunities to solve them together. And you know, the evolution of that in Portland is super inspiring in terms of Dignity Village, and Mark, of course, can tell that story, because they start perhaps answering that question, you know, through saying, you know, and again, Mark can tell you the story of Dignity Village, because that happened out of the village building conversions, right, Mark?
Yeah, because of all of the momentum of city repair and the village building convergence, when we were invited to start organizing with homeless people, our anti-camping ordinance had just been overturned, which created kind of a portal in our reality, an opportunity to reconsider the way that basically the relationship of homeless people to the city and to place. So we created an assertion that was rather aggressive, but it led to a new ordinance that allows people to create place-based villages, self-care, self-organized, self-governed, self-maintained. And the best one that we've created so far is Dignity Village. I'm happy to say it's replicated up and down the West Coast and moving eastward as well, up into Canada too. But Digny Village is a population of between 60 and as many as 70 people seasonally. It's a self-organized village. They've built the entire physical fabric. They run it and maintain it. It's the only car-free, totally walkable, totally talkable community. It has the highest rate of political participation in terms of voting of all communities in the city, and it also has by far the lightest carbon footprint. So it's an example not only for homeless, you know, advocates, but for every single person who cares about responding to the challenge of climate change.
That's so beautiful. And so the image that can spiral forth, and maybe I don't know how much of this you've dreamed or the dream is incarnated into molecules, but so Dignity Village, there would be places, so homeless are actually now home full. And then, you know, gardens where people could pick a peach and eat. I mean, is that part of the dynamic, Mark?
It's a verdant village.
Ah.
Sort of human permaculture village, where permaculture isn't just a planting project. It's sort of, we've sort of dumped it all over ourselves and become permaculture, and very much based on the idea of an indigenous model of people creating their own environment. Yeah, it's an unbelievably inspiring project that is just full of fruiting vines and plants and food everywhere.
And it's also an antidote to churlishness. Those people who go, that if you give homeless people hot showers, they might like it. And it's like, oh, stop! You go eat a peach in the village. There you go. Yes. Cause
what I love about that is that it just gets really at the heart of the whole placemaking movement to me, which is this like this basic human right to create. To create a space that we can feel safe in. And we've allowed all of our codes and designs to not only divide us, but to disempower ourselves from just like something that feels like a very fundamental access that I think that it feels really good to have, to know how to create a safe place for oneself. And so many of us are so far away from that. And it's a great start in the Village Building Convergence to say, yeah, okay, those of us with all of our safe houses all over the place, well, let's create some spaces between us and start to remember. And hopefully next year and throughout the year, we'll remember some more. And then years on down the line, we'll be able to tell the story of how we remembered to become indigenous to this place again and to take care of ourselves using local materials and local human resources. And it just, it feels like a part of a huge arc of remembering that we're doing. But it's not just obviously going back. It's like Mark said, it's moving forward from where we are now, you know, and just being willing to be messy, get creative, and to take a different kind of ownership, like an ownership that comes from saying, yeah, you know, I'm not just going to abdicate my responsibility. And it's not about owning private property. It's actually about owning the fact that I live here, and that together with my neighbors, we need to create a world that is worth passing on to our children. And that, to me, is the Dignity Village, and it just strikes at the heart of what's possible with the placemaking movement.
No, that's so great, and I love both of you also, your word crafting, going, yes, that's so good, Dignity Village. And I think, you know, in the micro of the upcoming September, help me, because guys, Andrew, it's September 10th to the 21st, yes?
September 12th to the 21st.
Thank you.
Yeah.
September 12th through the 21st in Sebastopol. So wonderful and inviting. And then, you know, from that, and then the beautiful work that Mark's been doing in Portland for 14 years, and then if we think of, you know, in the world, you know, what's going down and what's coming up, the increased destruction of neighborhood, you know, when you're speaking, Mark, about the ancient places and how we go to remind ourselves of how we have and want to live. For me, so much, was Syria, and Aleppo was such a great space where the surprise that was important for, Americans to be surprised by, it was so safe for women. Again, we could walk around Aleppo late at night through the Zocalos, the gathering places, and the little hidden alleys and all of that, and be invited into the courtyards of people's homes at 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. with no fear at all. And of course, that's been blasted away, and the souk, which was the oldest continuous marketplace in the world for 2,500 years, and that until now. And we go, oh, and so, part of the metaphoric shape-shifting, it's like when the Bamiyan Buddhas were blown up by the Taliban, we go, ooh, well, may it be that the invisible energy dedicated in the Bamiyan Buddhas then waft through the world, and maybe part of your, dancing with, destroyer creator energy going, all right, it's going down here, but it's coming up here. Life, is that by the destruction of so many beautiful courtyards and zocalos and caravanserais in the old world of Syria and the neighborhoods of Gaza, and we go, oh, terrible, okay. So it's going down there, but then coming up, rising up through the cracks, again. I mean, is that a narrative you can relate to, Mark?
Absolutely. I actually think in terms of very basic, sort of simple terms, to help me kind of organize my understanding of these dynamics through history. In this case, graphically. So the grid, let's start with a circle. Circle represents the sort of inherent kind of characteristics of nature, the context within which we live, and we've noticed it. Over time, people create villages with gathering places that are defined with edges, rather circular, and they pay attention to time, they pay attention to the apparent geometry of things, and it comes back to then infrastructures, cultural infrastructures that native people create that celebrate the inherent circular, spherical, and cyclical nature of things. So that would tend to be the circle, and as opposed to that is the sort of abstractionist, aggressive, hostile, compartmentalized sort of impulse toward empire that's characterized always by the square, which is, overall, pretty much an unnatural structure without inherent strength, but easily drawn and imposed. So I always think in terms of the circle and the square, and all of history, at least for the last few hundred years on this landmass and the last several thousand years stemming from the Middle East, it seems to be organized by this interplay between the perpetual, cyclical, perennial rise of circles and circularity everywhere, and then the imposition of this kind of hostile infrastructure of aggression and control and madness that keeps being cast over the world, characterized by squares, and yet the circles keep reemerging over and over again, and everything actually is the circle. The square is just made out of broken pieces of it. That's how I understand it. That's how I organize it in my thoughts.
That's beautiful. No, we speak so much the same language, really, all of us, and I guess it's in all of ourselves, right? Because part of the, yes, exactly as you say, the frame story is, here's colonialism and empire and dominance going down, but taking so much life with it, okay? And here's ingenuity and democracy kind of rising up. Is our manner of relating an imposition grid or an offering, a circle in struck by lightning of creativity into spiral going, yes, there we go. And certainly, flying across the country, which Cassandra will help me to not do as much of, will plan my eventual moving to, who knows where that is anyway, backstage going. But when one flies across the country, it's imposed grid on top of land, and the imposition of structure and on rivers and the denying rivers their floodplains, which increases floods, and that's all a metaphor for all of that. But Mark, have you been to Providence, Rhode Island? Did you see what they did in their restoration of the river?
No, I haven't been there yet.
Well, it is beckoning to you at some point when you get on your donkey and ride across the country. But because it is an amazing thing, you know, in Providence, all of its quirky thing and its corruption and headquarters of the mafia and all. But still, you know, again, New Alchemy, all kinds of good things. But what they did was they restored the river to its natural meandering state from where it had been imprisoned by concrete, and they put up this fabulous river walk. Of, you know, torches and things and beauty and places to gather, and where there's, you know, theatrical performances and poetry and art thing, you know. And I just remember when I saw it, I was like, how did this happen? Nobody's making any money off of this. How did this happen? And they said, well, it's a miracle. It wanted to happen. You know, many people for a long time ago, it's a miracle. It is not a commercial thing. It is a community thing. So you might, you know, at some point go, hell, go, you know, just wave to it going, hello, fellow, a little miracle over there on the East Coast against all odds in a, you know, corrupt government, but nonetheless the desire for gardens and gardening and theatrical space and where the community could find how creative it is, you know. Anyway, so there's that over there. Yeah.
I love to see it like that, like a force that's unstoppable, that is happening all over the place, everywhere and inside of each of us. And that's why when people don't even know exactly what the village building convergence is, they go, something inside of them and says, yes, that sounds really right. We should be doing that. And Mark and I got a chance to do a little talk one time that we called In Our Nature. And we got into how, you know, on a bacterial level, it's completely in our nature to create communities that are sustainable. And so I love to feel like that's, you know, those mycelial and bacterial levels are, that unseen world is supporting all of us all the time and actually helping us shape shift our consciousness. And so then when somebody says a really good idea, even if it's like a, you know, business person or a council member or whatever, that part of them goes, oh, yes, that's right. We should go for that. And so that's a very trickster-like thought, which leads me to wanting to share one other piece about the group, the VBC organizers. There's some young folks, like I said, people in their 20s are just so awesome, and they've got these great ideas, and they're totally channeling the trickster. So one of the features of the Sebastopol VBC, in addition to all of these, like, you know, many months long planned placemaking projects and, you know, very official schedule things and evening programming and, you know, all of that you can find on our website, and tickets are on sale now and all of that good stuff.
And the website again, madam,
the website is SebastopolVBC.org.
That's village,
and
yeah.
V as in Victor, B as in, well, I like to say V as in village, G as in building, and C as in convergence.
Yeah.
SebastopolVBC.org, and you can get the schedule there and buy tickets and learn all about everything. But what I want to say is we're also going to have a team of people throughout the whole event that we have called the Shenanigators.
Uh-huh.
And so they are responsible for creating spontaneous, fun, you know, positive mayhem, you know, just really great things that want to happen, that they can bring their little, you know, lightning rod of spontaneous mischief and just enliven the whole festival.
So wait a minute. They're planning spontaneity? It sounds very German.
Well, I think that they are just planning to be spontaneous. So, and I believe a lot of them will be on bicycles with superhero capes, which I think did come from Portland VBC. Is that true, Mark?
Well, yeah, but only if they're naked.
Ah, well, there you go.
There you go. And so,
well, you can be naked with a cape.
You could be naked. Okay. So I'm not sure if our Shenanigators are going to be naked, although there are very cool reports of Portland naked bike riding. But our Shenanigators are just going to be moving through the festival, just bringing that spark of extra energy to a project. We don't even know what they're capable of. In fact, I know some things that I can't even tell you because they're awesome surprises. And so you're just going to have to come to the Sebastopol Village Building Convergence and just see what this is all about. I think it's totally okay, even if you live from out of the area, to come and help other people make their place. Because then when you have a village building convergence or a placemaking project, we'll come down and help you. And so it's just, you know, we got to just be cross-pollinators like that and take our good stories on the road. But we are welcoming people from near and far to come and participate.
And part of why I was sort of mewing, face pressed against the window pane of the desirable dream you were animating, Cassandra, going, ooh. I mean, I live in an unintentional community, which is quite adorable. I mean, a dead-end street is a wonderful thing. But where we've outsourced our authority to the Army Corps of Engineers and the community, whatever, going, we're going to do a bike path and a thing, and we're going to put up lights under here, and we're going to do this water retaining garden. But it was like, uh-oh. And then halfway through this kind of not really well-conceived project, the person quit, and they abandoned it. So right above our neighborhood, what used to be a cute little community plot with fruit trees. They cut down all the fruit trees, and now it's overgrown, and there's giant herds of rats wandering through there, and the water retaining garden is now a kind of dangerous collecting water that then unloads a flood of water down into the community, flooding people's basements. Anyway, so it's like, right, again, incentive to inhale it back, going, all right, you abandoned it, let us little, our little street people inhale it back and just not wait for the dementia tours to do a bad thing. I love what you were saying, Cassandra, about, yes, the shenanigators go, so we go, yes, let hijinks be a tonic antidote to the jinx on community. We're lifting the
there
jinxes. We're lifting the jinxes with hijinks. But that's great. And then, let's see, so many things, Mark, that you'd had the, you know, again, once we have this kind of priming the pump of creativity, you'd also mentioned, you know, and birthday parties in the commons and, the spaces between our homes that bring us together rather than separate us. And it is kind of like, you know, one of the things I'm increasingly animating is beauty poker, going, here's an act of beauty. I see your act of beauty and raise you one. So it continues to spiral in Portland. Okay, so you've got birthday parties, you've got the Dignity Village thing, you've got, and you're coming down. Are you coming down for the entire 10 days to Sebastopol, Mark?
I'm coming down for the latter part of it, the last, I think, 4 or so days to help out with things. Unfortunately, I can't come sooner, but we're doing a whole lot of village building here in Portland that I'm already kind of engaged in. But one thing I would say to people to help them understand why they, or to help them kind of become excited about coming to Sebastopol, basically, I mean, speaking about decolonizing, everybody owes it to themselves to decolonize their own awareness, you know, to realize, gosh, all I really do have are the senses within which I live and this body that I am inside of. Until I decolonize, sort of rid myself of this terror of other people and of life itself, you know, to see that myself is greater than just this one body, but that's, it's actually part of a greater undying life force in the world. How do I do that? So the idea of the VBC, wherever it happens, in whatever form it takes, is to give people a continuous experience of not just working with those people and living with those people and eating with those people and creating with those people, but have a continuous, sort of a continuum of place-based experience where you work and play and create and learn and eat, take times, sort of walk away, re-engage, do all the things that you would do, but do it all at once together continuously for 10 days. Create a portal in your own life to feel what it was like to be a place-based person. And at the end of it, you know, feel what's in your heart as you're starting to remember the kinds of sort of sensations and understandings that we used to have before we were conquered. That's the idea of the Village Building Convergence. It's basically a villager practice. Everybody gets a diploma at the end in you know, in the sense that, like, they become ready to go out and savor the world kind of thing.
That is so wonderful and well said. I look forward to perpetual cahooting with the likes of both of yourselves and, yes, bringing the best of, you know, Barcelona and everything and living art, you know, everywhere. So thank you so much, Cassandra Ferreira and Mark Lakeman from Portland, Oregon, home of one of my favorite titles, Big Mama's Church of Christ the Girly Man, where I spoke once. But also, again, SevastopolVBC.org will be a festival placemaking, Conjuring the Commons. Again, thank you. Thank you both so much. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. And thanks always to Douglas Bell in Washington, D.C., and the team at KPFA, Erica Bridgman, on and on. And there we go, woof, woof, woof team. And may our gatherings be good for birds and animals and critters and soil. Definitely. Okay, thank you.
The Marin Task Force on the Americas will hold their annual dinner on Sunday, September 21st from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Marin, located at 240 Channing Way in San Rafael, California. Miguel Tinker-Salas, a foremost authority on political and social issues confronting Latin America, will speak about U.S.-Latin America relations in the 21st century. Award-winning singer and songwriter Reed Frommer will perform. This is a benefit for the Marin Task Force on the Americas. For more information, call 415-924-3227. That number again, 415-924-3227. This event is wheelchair accessible.